You're listening to Monday Morning Live, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League.
Good morning and welcome to Monday Morning Live, the Facebook stream, and Monday Morning Live, the podcast. I'm your host, Emily Kalaszewski, membership engagement specialist here at the League. I'm filling in for Matt Bach, who's out this month. So lucky that everyone gets to see me today and hear from me today. So please remember to post your questions in the comment section. We'll respond here as they come in or later if you post them after our live stream has ended. And we are starting today on the topic of PFAS. So let's go basic here first. Let's explain what the issue is and what's the latest happening here in Lansing on this.
Yeah, so John and I were able to participate in a stakeholder listening session last week with the Department of Environment, Great Lakes, and Energy. And this was a meeting where we were able to get down and discuss what are the things that people would like to see in the rulemaking process as we address PFAS. So going back a little bit, back in June, the Science Advisory Work Group released their findings of what they thought the risk of PFAS was currently in Michigan, and they established some health-based values which were adopted. And so these are health-based values for a broad number of contaminants. There's over 4,000 contaminants within the PFAS family. But they looked at the ones that were probably the most prevalent in our communities and assigned a minimum risk of 6 parts per trillion. And so a lot of folks have been really concerned that that's very low. Right now, the EPA, their standard is up at 70 parts per trillion. That's expected to go down later in the year. But this is just the area of which where health benefits, health detriments happen in the human body. So anything from birth defects to ailments at the level of 6 parts per trillion, that's where it begins. And so using those health-based values, we'll use those as a benchmark to establish where we need to adjust the new standard. And that's where we're coming in, bringing in stakeholder input, talking to our local utilities, seeing what they need, what's the cost benefits, what are the new treatment facilities they may need, infrastructure, making sure that we have those in place, because what we don't want to happen is to not have those communications, not have those conversations, and end up with something that our communities can't fulfill on. It's very difficult for them to do.
Yeah, so having, and we'll talk about this next, gone through the lead and copper process, sitting in the stakeholder meeting here last week, I was you know, very excited in some ways to know that the way in which the approach that Eagle is taking this process is very positive right now. They're really getting into the weeds in a way in which we didn't get to in the lead and copper scenario. And they're also breaking their stakeholder feedback up into specific groups, which allows us, quite frankly, on the front end to have a much more open and direct dialogue about it, which will be our hope that it then develops a better rule at the end of the day.
Go ahead. No, you're good. Go ahead.
Well, so what John said, like, we were really well represented in that meeting. We had lots of local utilities join us, as well as our friends at the Township Association and SEMCOG as well, sitting at the table.
Sure. So tell us, for those who weren't sitting in on those meetings, what are the next steps? What were the takeaways from that meeting in particular?
One that was really great was more listening sessions. I mean, we went well over time. We got into really in-depth conversations, and a lot of appreciation to the department for taking the time to listen and hear that out. One of the great things that they did is they said, you know, engage other people. Ask folks if they have other feedback or information that they want to share to bring that to the table. So first, they'll probably have another stakeholder session similar to what we had before. And then once the rule is drafted, which we can expect that by October 1st, we'll begin to come back to the table with our partners, counties and townships, and really look at what the text looks like and analyze that, and then continue to aggregate feedback from our members.
Sure. So if our members already have feedback, or they want to get involved, or they want their voices to be heard, do they contact you?
Yes, they can contact me. They can send me an email. My email is hrichards@nml.org. Or if they put something in the comments section, we can get back to them and make sure that they're looped in.
Excellent. And we are monitoring those comments now. So if you have questions while this is happening, we're happy to answer them as we're live. But moving on, I want to get to the lead and copper court case. I know you just touched on that briefly. There was a court ruling on this situation last week. Can you explain for us, John, what that was about?
Well, I can. So just a quick recap on lead and copper. This has been going on for well over a year and a half now. And so under the Snyder administration, they came down with a rule that would require communities to replace all of their lead service lines over the next 20 years at a rate of 5% a year. So there were four entities, Oakland County, Great Lakes Water Authority, Detroit Water and Sewage Department, and the City of Livonia, who challenged that ruling on a number of different fronts. And there was a ruling here 2 weeks ago that status quo is what will remain. And so there were no rulings in our favor, quite frankly. So whether that be in the way in which we talked about the ability to put it into our rates. The one outstanding one that is left is Headley, but based on the way the court ruling happened here a few days ago, we anticipate a similar result there. But the big question is what's next, right? So what do we do? So we know that our communities have to continue to implement the rule as it sits today. Those four entities that were involved in the case are going through their due diligence to determine what they will do next. We don't have standing in that right now. So they will be the determining factor as to whether there's an appeal or not, but they have yet to make that decision. And once they do, if they do, we will be sure to make that available. The other aspect of this is continuing to work with the administration, both Deagle and with the Attorney General, to see what our remedies are. And if we can get some clarification as to what we can actually do from a legal perspective, will be incredibly important. And then there's the legislative avenue that we might have to walk down. And we've had some conversations with legislators over the course of time that we might have to revisit now and determine what will be the best course of action for our members.
So can you tell us more about those conversations you've been having with legislators?
Yeah, so this has been something that throughout the process we've said, you know, where are the aspects of the rule that could use some additional clarification? So, you know, nobody has ever confused our desire to protect public health and safety with the ability to not remove lead, right? I mean, we want lead out of the system. The question is how do we do it in a fashion that doesn't jeopardize other parts of our system, or quite frankly, doesn't put our residents in a position where they can't afford it? And so the conversations that we've had directly about that is how do you create balance in the system to ensure that we're continuing to protect public health and safety, which is our number one priority, but still do it in a way that doesn't jeopardize other infrastructure and is legal under the system that we currently have today.
So what's some of the feedback you've been getting from the legislators as you've been having those conversations?
Yeah, so that's actually one of the most interesting parts about the rulemaking process, and something that we'll have to pay very close attention to under the PFAS aspect, is because it wasn't a legislative process to begin with. So many legislators, and even to this day, still have very little knowledge about what is actually out there in the rule. So there is a little bit of an education process that we've gone through, and then we've targeted some specific legislators that are more engaged in the process, and because of their roles on particular committees, have a very direct interest. And so those conversations, while they haven't produced a bill or anything like that, have been fruitful in the sense that they recognize that there is an issue and that there is some willingness on the front end, at least, to explore what some potential solutions could be.
Sure. Excellent. Harrisana, anything to add on that point?
No, I think John pretty much covered that.
All right, so we're moving on, I guess, unless there's anything else you'd like to update us on at this point.
No, so I was going to just go back to PFAS for a second, right? Because I think one thing, and again, I'll equate this to the lead and copper rule a little bit,
right,
that our members become concerned about is the timeline that Harrisana mentioned. And so the governor has laid out a very specific timeline, which in the meeting the other day I brought this up, worries me, right? Mm-hmm. Because the question really becomes is do we have enough knowns in this process to make a decision that will actually produce the results that we want it to happen? So I just want our members to understand that in our thought process, not only do we have the technical aspect of it, but we want to make sure that we don't rush the process to get a result that, again, puts us maybe in a position where we end up in court like we've done on lead and copper. So that is a very direct component of what we are advocating for in our meetings and trying to ensure that the timeframes meet the policy in a very direct way. And so I just wanted to bring that up because I know, as Harrisana mentioned, October 1st, people wonder what that means. You know, does that mean the rule is going to happen? That's not what that means. It's just another step in the process. But unlike lead and copper, which was very sort of, it has to be this point, has to be this point, has to be this point because of some timelines they wanted to meet, these are more guardrails at this point. And so we feel pretty comfortable with the fact that if we needed to extend those timelines out, that there would be a willing partner both in the administration and in the department to make that happen, or at least to consider that.
Right. Excellent. Well, another thing I think we can touch on while we're here today, John, is road funding.
Yeah.
It's a topic that comes up often. We know it's important for our members. So can you give us an update on road funding?
Yeah, I can. And the update is there is no update in some ways. You know, it is, as typically happens with big policy at the state level, there's a lot of negotiation happening in the back room right now. Fortunately, unlike in some other cases over at least my tenure at the league, we've been very directly at the table. And so from a very high level, what I can say is there's still a push to raise significant amount of revenue. The way in which to do that is still a challenge, right? I mean, just raising gas tax is not the easiest thing to do in the world. Raising it 45 cents is very likely not to happen. But where's that middle ground? But a couple of positives that are coming out of these conversations is one, that there's still a willingness to come up with a deal. But the other aspect is there's a lot of conversation around local options right now. Mm-hmm. And we know just from a pure basis, and if we compare ourselves to not only other states within the Midwest, but other states across the country, we have very limited access by comparison to local options. And the fact that we're having those conversations in a serious way, that if they can't raise the revenue at the state level in a substantial way, they give us more authority would be key. But we've been very direct, so our members know, we've been very direct that they can't just give us that authority and say, go do it on your own. They right. still have to do what their responsibility is and help us fund that infrastructure, be consistent with what we've done in the past, and make sure the distribution model doesn't just benefit one entity or the other, but really takes care of all of our transportation network. And that means money has to get back into our communities so we can get it into our neighborhoods, quite frankly.
Absolutely. So any sense now, as this has been a plan that's been proposed and discussed quite a bit, any sense now on the mood from the legislators that you've been talking to?
Well, considering there still hasn't been a single piece of legislation introduced on this, right? But the mood is there in the sense that they still have the desire to tackle the problem. There's some discussion on how big the problem is versus what they might be able to do politically, quite frankly.
Sure.
And so all of that will be weighed out, but they are going to be on an aggressive timeline over the next month. Everything that we're hearing is they would like to have it wrapped up prior to the budget, which maybe means mid-September, with the budget coming the last 2 weeks of September, hopefully through negotiations that we're a part of in the Senate and the House and the governor's a part of, we'll be able to come up with a deal that works. And, you know, we'll have to be, you know, honest, not only with ourselves, but with our members. At the end of the day, do we or do we not get on board with something? And what are those reasons why? And I think as of right now, it's still trending towards something that we should be able to support, and hopefully we'll have an impact on that. But hey, you know, with 45 or so odd days left before they want to get this done, you know, you never know what happens.
Right. So speaking of some legislative updates, we've been on the road a lot lately. We were at MME, the Michigan Municipal Executive Summer Workshop in Alpena just a few weeks ago. And then, Harrisana, you were in Port Huron for the Michigan Association of Mayors Summer Workshop. So tell us a little bit about the updates that you gave. Were you there, John?
No, I bailed on both.
So, Harrisana, you're in the hot seat. Tell us a little bit about MAM, the legislative update you gave there, and maybe some of the feedback you've received from our members.
Yeah, so because we're PFAS meeting, I was only able to be there for the second day, but Jen and I had a great legislative update. Jen was able to talk a lot about short-term rentals and where we are and kind of illustrate what we've been doing in the work group process and where we are up to this point. And then I was able to, fortunately, break the news of the lead and copper ruling, which was a big concern for our members. Sure. A lot of folks were very disappointed, had a lot of questions.
Right.
And that was the thing. It's really good to see that our communities are still ready to, you know, to tap in, to, you know, to help find solutions, to provide feedback. And I very much encourage them to keep doing that, to really, you know, continue to tell us what's going on in your communities as you navigate this process. One of the questions that we got was, what do you do if somebody says, hey, you can't fix my service lines, I don't want you on my property? And having the conversation of what the implications can be for the community, the fact that the outcome may be you must stop serving that person water to limit contamination elsewhere. And that can put people in a sticky situation.
Sure.
And so just making sure that we're continuing to have these conversations as now we have to, as John said, status quo, as we're moving through this process and starting to replace these lines, that we are being very direct about the difficulties that we're experiencing in that. And then PFAS, you know, we had a good update, brought people in, we thanked our members. And also, again, thank you so much to all the members who provided feedback, calls, texts, you know, communicated with their local utilities to make sure voices were heard, because that was really amazing to come with that information. We were very well represented and prepared for that meeting. And we were able to, you know, translate that over to our members at MAM. And they were very happy to see that we're still, you know, continuing to fight for them and also ensuring that what happened with lead and copper will not happen again.
Absolutely. And we'll continue to need feedback from our members. So thank you. And we're thanking you in advance for what you'll do for us in the future and the feedback we'll get from you in the future as we move forward on these.
So just to jump on something Harrisana said, because this is a great point. There were some very specific questions that happened on the lead and copper piece. And while we will do everything we can to help our members, I know one of the pieces of advice that we've given our members time and time again on this issue is to have their city attorney reach out and talk to Eagle and talk to the experts there to make sure that if they have some very specific questions about that rule and how the department thinks they should be implementing it to make sure that there is consistency there in terms of what they do and what other communities are doing, it's very important that they reach out and not just do something or you know, hope that this is the way to do it, but reaching out to the department and using their legal entity in which to do that is going to be critically important, not only to protect themselves, hopefully, at some point, but to make sure that they're documenting that, they understand, and they know who they've talked to and when they talk to them. So if they have to go out and do something like a partial or not connect that service line, that they understand why they're doing that.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, shifting gears just slightly, I want to talk about our Community Excellence Award. Which will be given out at convention this year in Detroit, which is September 25th through 27th. We've been on the road, we've been in Alpena, we've been to Port Huron, we've been all sorts of places the last couple of months, but we're on the road to Detroit next month. We hope to see you there. So we have our four finalists that are advancing to convention to be voted on. That's Bay City's Uptown Bay City Project, which is a transformational redevelopment project, Dearborn's Unified Dispatch Center, an innovative intergovernmental project which incorporated five other communities in Wayne County under one state-of-the-art Unified Dispatch Center. We have Madison Heights Visualizes the Future. It's a community arts project. And Mason's City of Mason and Mason Public Schools City Hall Partnership, where City Hall and Mason Public Schools share resources and office space. You can learn more about those projects at cea.mml.org. And also, those projects will be presenting, on Thursday, September 26th during our morning general session. And then all of our members and those in attendance will be able to vote for their favorite project. And that winner will be awarded on Friday, September 27th during our closing general session. We've got to give a special shout out. I think we had over 10,000 votes online for our Community Excellence Award projects. So 17 projects total. They're all on the website, so you can see all of the great things our communities have been doing across the state. But over 10,000 votes narrowed down those four finalists, in addition to our very extra special judges. Those are Luke Forrest, the Executive Director for the Community Economic Development Association of Michigan, Jeanette Pierce, Executive Director for the City Institute, and Tanisha Sanders, Director of Government Affairs and Communications for the Michigan, Ohio, Indiana Area Waste Management. So thank you to our judges. Thank you to all of those who voted. We are so looking forward to convention next month in September in Detroit. For more information, you can find us on mml.org. And we will see you in a couple of weeks for another edition of Monday Morning Live. Thank you, Harrisana Richards, John Lamacchia, for joining us today. And have a great week.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.